It's the Confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. How many times during the past month have you asked friends and family on a phone call, a video chat, or text, how are you doing? Pittsburgh-based market and research firm Campos has surveyed a few Allegheny County residents about how they're doing during this pandemic and the resulting shutdown of businesses and sheltering at home. Kate Murphy is the president of Campos. Kate, what are people most worried about?
We talked to 1,500 residents of Allegheny County, and we found that they're all feeling widespread concern. And in particular, they're not feeling confident that public transportation is safe. They're not feeling confident that other people are abiding by safety mandates. That's something that they're worried about. By contrast, they are feeling confident in banking and financial institutions, which is notable given that they say they're quite worried about their personal financial situation. And they're confident in their ability to acquire food safely and the healthcare system as well.
A little over 1,500 people responded, as you said. Were there any strong dividing lines, age, race, income level?
Yeah, we saw that people of all income levels are concerned, but people of lower income are feeling a little more worried. They also feel less confident in academic institutions that are working on medical research and in local elected officials. When it comes to race, there is a lot of similarities in how people of different races are responding to the crisis. But African-American respondents reported feeling less confident that their employment status would be unchanged by the coronavirus.
How many people did you hear from who are still employed with all the disruption? Do they feel like they're still productive?
Yes, we heard from a number of people. We heard from about 17% of people said they have temporarily or permanently lost their jobs. So that's a lot of folks who are out of work due to the coronavirus. For comparison, we saw a national survey last week that said that was about 10% of Americans nationwide. For the folks who are working from home now, we saw about 35% of people say they're working from home as a result of coronavirus. They say they're feeling less productive. About 40% of them said they're feeling less productive. So these are people who are anxious. They're reading the news more. They're worried about their safety, their financial situation. For many people, you add on childcare duties and having to oversee homeschooling, and it's a really tough mix.
The stock market has been really volatile. Are people confident they'll be able to weather this if the shutdown continues well into the summer? What did you hear?
We asked people, how confident are you feeling that the economy will recover in 2020 from the effects of the coronavirus? And we saw only about 37% said they were confident in that. We had 45% of people saying they were doubtful that the economy would recover in 2020. So people definitely feeling worried that these effects will stretch into 2021.
What about medical research and our leadership? Are people confident that Pittsburgh is being led effectively?
Yes, we found broad confidence in Allegheny County elected officials, City of Pittsburgh elected officials, and broad support for Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf. By contrast, there was less confidence in President Trump and in the Congress.
One of the subgroups in your survey is generations. We've all been told that the elderly are particularly vulnerable to this outbreak, yet they seem to be the most confident, especially compared to millennials. Why might that be?
Yeah, we were surprised by that finding, too. For one, we think that millennials, for many of them, this is sort of the second, quote unquote, once in a lifetime crisis that they have weathered after the recession in 2008. So they've seen what can happen to the job market and how hard it is to recover. For older folks, they might be coming at this with more of a long view. So they're taking it with a little bit more in stride.
On your website, which we'll have links to in our show notes, Campos invites others to contribute to the survey. So is this study ongoing? And do you think the data, or at least confidence levels, might change over time?
Yes, we are still taking responses on our website, and it will be interesting to see how things change over time, how as guidelines change and the different anti-coronavirus measures change as well, how people's confidence level shifts. So we'll be tracking that and continuing to report on their findings.
Kate Murphy is the president of the marketing and research firm Campos. Thanks for your time, Kate.
Thank you.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Richard King Mellon Foundation is stepping up to help combat the impact of the coronavirus. The foundation is distributing $15 million in grants to prevent further job losses and to help struggling nonprofits. Joining us to discuss where the money is going is Director Sam Ryman. Sam, how did you settle on the three areas that you focused on? Healthcare grants, emergency operation funding for nonprofits, and the economic development resources?
When we found ourselves in the middle of this crisis as a team, we took a step back and began to evaluate what were the greatest needs in the community. And the very first one that was obvious to us was that many of the organizations we support across our entire portfolio, whether that's economic development, education, human services, or environmental conservation, that this was having an impact on those organizations in a multitude of ways. And just seeing the need that was arising from the different conversations we were having with all the different organizations that we support made it clear that there was an immediate emergency need where we could fill gaps that wouldn't necessarily be addressed by the federal stimulus.
You're partnering with the University of Pittsburgh Center for Vaccine Research in giving them nearly $200,000. What will this money help them do that they might not have been able to do otherwise?
Our funding will allow the Center for Vaccine Research at the University of Pittsburgh to purchase specialized equipment, bioimaging equipment, and other materials and supplies that they need to advance the research that they're conducting on one of their most promising vaccine candidates.
Sam Ryman is the director of the R.K. Mellon Foundation, which does provide support for WESA. Sam, you asked your current nonprofit partners in southwestern Pennsylvania to apply for emergency operating grants. How many struggling nonprofits have you heard from so far?
It's a great question, and the response was somewhat overwhelming. We received 77 proposals in about a week's time. And from that list, we've been very diligently trying to sort through. As you would expect, these are not easy decisions where we know that what we're doing and what we're supporting is going to have an impact on those organizations, their ability to remain viable, their ability to keep their people on staff. And of that total, we are prepared to take 44 of those forward and anticipate that we'll make announcements by the end of this week about who the recipients are for those grants.
You're awarding the Progress Fund and Bridgeway Capital each $500,000. What work is that money funding?
In those two particular instances, they serve small and medium-sized businesses through traditional financing and loans. And rather than have us become the entity that would field those types of requests, we saw this as a way to bridge the gap between when the federal dollars would become available to for-profit businesses as well as nonprofits so that they could secure that capital today and not have to wait to be able to raise the dollars that they need to keep their people on staff and to continue to provide essential services to the community.
Sam, whether it's small businesses or nonprofits, how concerned are you that some just might not recover?
This is a real concern, and part of the guessing game for us is how long will it be until we get back to some sense of normalcy? And unfortunately, that's a question that none of us can answer right now. And so we've tasked our partners with coming up with creative ideas right now to put the programs in place that need to be there in order to help people based on what we see happening today and what we expect to continue over the next 6 months.
Sam Ryman is the director of the Richard King Mellon Foundation. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's the Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. Most childcare providers in Pennsylvania were closed under state order last month, but providers that operate out of their homes are allowed to stay open. As Keystone Crossroads Miles Bryan reports, that's forced them to make a difficult choice: lose income or potentially expose their families to coronavirus.
Latanta Godbolt runs Small Wonders Family Childcare out of her two-story row home in North Philadelphia. A few weeks ago, she was confronted with a choice she didn't think she should have to make: whether she should stay open during the pandemic.
My son is asthmatic, I'm asthmatic, so we're really at risk. And the state is giving us, you know, the choice. You decide. So it's really uncomfortable position to be in.
Ultimately, Godbolt decided she would stay open, but just for a few of the dozen or so kids she usually sees in a day. Those children's parents are still going to work. The kids have nowhere else to go. Plus, Godbolt says the cash is helping her family of six stay afloat. Every day she cleans more, wipes down more, but still she worries. There's no room for error.
If something goes wrong and we are all exposed, we can't shut down for 14 days and air it out. We're all stuck here and have to deal with those consequences.
That difficult calculus has been repeated all across the state these last few weeks. About a fifth of Pennsylvania's roughly 7,000 licensed childcare providers are based out of a home. In-home providers generally care for only half a dozen kids at a time and are usually cheaper and have more flexible hours than commercial childcare. But while the state ordered those childcare centers closed and then allowed them to apply for a waiver to reopen, in-home providers were left to make that call themselves. Donna Cooper thinks that was a mistake.
It's the government's role to really make those hard decisions.
Cooper is the executive director of the advocacy group Public Citizens for Children and Youth.
The family-based childcare providers, like, they have the least access to support. They don't have three staff that can read all these government documents. They don't have somebody they can turn to. So the people with the least support need the greatest bright line guidance to help them.
State officials issued health recommendations for childcare providers still open, urging them to limit toy sharing and keep kids 6 feet apart. Pennsylvania Child Care Association Executive Director Diane Barber said providers operating in a house just aren't equipped for that kind of social distance.
Just in terms of physicality, how do you do that?
Health concerns are why Denise Cressman made the agonizing decision to shut down her daycare in Montour County last month. She's run it out of her home in Danville for 30 years.
My husband is 69 years old. He is stage 4 COPD and end-stage emphysema, so this disease could be a death sentence for him.
Cressman misses the six rowdy little boys she usually cares for, and she's also freaked out about her finances. She and her husband have the mortgage paid off, but that still leaves the monthly car loan, utilities, and other expenses. She calculates how much money she's lost on an old-fashioned Casio calculator.
So in a month, I've lost $3,700.
Cressman has been trying to apply for unemployment benefits. She should get them. The new federal stimulus package expands unemployment to self-employed people like Cressman for the first time. But as of Monday, Pennsylvania had not yet released its special application form for self-employed people. Now Cressman says she's considering another option, retirement.
I'm going to have to weigh, do I just collect Social Security, or do I put forth the additional effort to get through this and can open back up for, you know, the kids and families that are depending on me? But we honestly don't know.
Roughly two-thirds of residential child care providers are closed right now. Advocates say that without more support, some will never reopen. For Keystone Crossroads, I'm Miles Bryan.
It's the Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Pittsburgh Public Schools will begin virtual instruction this week, but some districts across the state have been teaching students formally for weeks. 90.5 WESA's Sarah Schneider reports on the inequities in education that are being exacerbated by the pandemic.
Whenever students return to buildings, most of them will be behind. Pennsylvania's public and private schools have been closed for nearly a month, and they won't reopen this year. School leaders scrambled after the initial closure on March 16th to make sure the most essential need, food, was covered. Many then distributed educational enrichment materials that wouldn't count towards grades. With unclear guidance from the federal and state departments of education, districts like Pittsburgh said they couldn't move to formal remote learning. That was in part because not every student had devices or internet access, and they weren't able to meet the legally protected rights of students with disabilities or English language learners.
Nobody was prepared for this.
That's Pittsburgh Public Superintendent Anthony Hamlin.
But now that we're here, it's going to take us a little time to make sure that we roll out a product that's going to meet the needs, the equitable needs of all of our students and not just some.
A majority of the 23,000 students in the state's second largest district are considered economically disadvantaged. The district waited almost 2 weeks to survey parents about their technology needs. So far, the district has spent $1.5 million on computers. Still, Hamlet says not all students will get one. Some will get paper packets. But some districts were prepared for the closure and moved online quickly. Pine Richland, just north of the city, started instruction a day after schools closed. Only 3% of the district's 4,600 students live below the poverty line. Superintendent Brian Miller says more than 90% of families have internet access.
Once we knew that we needed to go down this path, it was just like flipping a switch.
He says, though, technology wasn't the key factor in flipping the switch. He sent his first message to parents about preparing for the coronavirus on February 5th.
You know, I would say the most important thing that we did wasn't the fact that we had families with internet access. It was the fact that we had invested, hundreds of hours in planning and preparation before the need to close occurred.
Guidance from the state has been confusing at times. The Department of Education can't mandate that schools teach students remotely. It can only strongly encourage them to do so. Secretary of Education Pedro Rivera said schools shouldn't let the fear of legal action stop them from making a good faith effort to teach all kids. Cheryl Kleiman with the Education Law Center in Pittsburgh says there's a difference between delaying instruction in order to make a plan for those students and rejecting remote instruction because of lawsuit fears. She said schools need to make sure they're tracking what students with disabilities have missed during this time.
But that doesn't just mean that it's going to be reverting to a bunch of lawsuits.
Her concern now is that online platforms won't translate to quality education.
So it's hard to imagine that putting a laptop and an internet connection in the hands of a kindergartner is going to ensure that that child has access to education and learning experiences that are meaningful to them right now.
Pittsburgh Public Chief Academic Officer Monika Jenkins says her team started gathering packets for students before schools closed. But they determined worksheets weren't enough and decided to wait and see when schools would reopen. Jenkins says it's going to take a very long time for students to catch up after nearly a month off.
It's not something that's going to be addressed just in curriculum writing alone. There's going to have to be a lot of other things, factors that we have to consider when we start to plan for the unfinished learning.
That learning won't look the same. Jenkins spent last week training teachers to use Microsoft Teams to communicate with students. Instruction likely won't be in real time. On top of the lost weeks in the classroom, schools will have to account for the time teachers spend every year making up for what students have forgotten over summer break. I'm Sarah Schneider, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. Today's show and past programs can be found at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Tom Hurley, Helen Wigger, Kylie Kaczynski, and Megan Harris. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.